Save big money at Menards. Never get locked out from lost keys again. Menards carries a huge selection of electronic lock sets. Get a Truebolt touchscreen deadbolt that features one-touch locking and 50 programmable user codes. Available in matte black or satin nickel finishes, on sale now through September 8th at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Save big money at Menards.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in Boys Huddle with me, Bram, and with me, per usual, my master, all things video and sound, Maxine.
How's it going?
Maxine, fired up to announce, man, after way too long of a break, rejoining us in the huddle, a noted sports author with bylines at The Ringer, The Herald, The Real GM at FanSided, the former Warriors beat writer for the Bay Area News Group, the current host of the Locked On Heat, Locked On NBA, and one of my favorite people on earth to record a podcast with, Mr. Wes Goldberg. What's going on, Wes?
Oh, thanks for the airborne, guys.
Oh, wow. Dude, wow. We've had a lot of professionals on the show. No one has ever come with their own air horn. Let's fucking go, Wes.
That's what we have. We have a soundboard here. We're ready to go.
I cannot wait to jump in here with you. And if I'm coming off as a little discombobulated, you may notice that I'm standing up, dude. This is the first time I've ever recorded a podcast while standing up.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, it's weird, right? And like the angle on it's kind of weird. I just had, I'm on vacation. My family and I are in Santa Cruz. We're staying at those hotels. It's a small enough hotel. I went downstairs to grab some coffee. I'm either sick or hungover. I can't really tell. And I mean, it's not a big hotel, dude. It's like 5-6 floors. I get into the elevator and this little kid and his father gets in. Kid could be older than like 6-7 years old. He's wearing a bunch of Disneyland shit, which is very strange because we are not in Anaheim, but you know, fine. I make eye contact with the kid and he says, which floor do you want? I say the fifth. He, as he makes eye contact, presses every button in the elevator.
No.
And it's just like, what the hell? Yes. He's just like, what'd you ask me for? You're like, what's going on, dude? And like as I'm being punched by this 5 or 6 year old kid, the father doesn't say shit. And it's not like he's on a phone or anything. Whoa. Like he's just there, you know, just he watches the thing. We stop at every goddamn stop and then the fifth floor comes out and I get out. I don't know what to do, man. I'm still like, I feel like that kid stole my soul. Like I'm very embarrassed. Like I don't, my whole vacation.
How old is this kid?
I'm going to lean older to make me feel better. 6, maybe 6.
Okay.
Maybe as old as 7.
So I used to be, quick story, I used to be a camp counselor for a lot of years, like a high school job, and it was primarily 6 and 7 year olds. And the one thing that all the parents would say, it's like, look out. This is when little boys learn to lie. So like that's when all the just the troublemaking stuff starts coming out with these little boys. And I bet you that dad didn't say anything because that's not the first time that freaking kid has pushed every button on the elevator and he's like, this is just my life now. But for him to not say shit to you is that's a public faux pas. That he's got to do something there. At least give you a look like, I'm sorry, dude, this is my whole life. And then you almost feel bad for him in that moment.
1,000,000%, and I love your read on this. I'll be even more transparent. As a parent who has like gone through enough of this, what that screamed to me was he was picking his battles. That father was in the middle of a fucking hellscape. His morning had already been a nightmare. You know, it's just like, nope, not this one. Like, I don't care. You can deal with this elevator thing. I've got to deal with this kid for the next 2 hours or the next 20 years. But Wes, strangely enough, okay, this is not the social interaction I wanted to run by. I'm going to set this up and we're going to revisit it down the line. Earlier this week, a friend of mine gave me a call and was starting a podcast and asked me, what's a piece of advice? You know, for someone starting a show, they wanted to do a podcast. What's the number one piece of advice you could give me? And I freaked out. I wasn't sure what to say. Don't tell me now. All right. We're going to revisit this at the end of the show. Think on this. It's going to come up because you, as I said, you are one of my favorite people on earth to record a podcast with. So I'd love your advice on that with all that stuff in mind. Let's jump in. We got a whole bunch of Warriors stuff to talk about. But before I go Warriors, tell me about Summer League, man. I know you just got back. This is a like lifetime goal of mine. I really want to go to Vegas at some point. How was it? Let's live vicariously through you.
So this was a new Summer League experience for me for a couple of reasons. It was the shortest Vegas trip that I had done. Usually I'm there for 3 or 4 days. I was there for 1 full day. I got in on a Friday, was there for a full Saturday, left first thing on Sunday. So that was the in and out part of it was a little strange. And to use your word from earlier, discombobulating. That is a long trip. I am not in California anymore. It's not just like a hop over the lake kind of trip, like 1 hour trip anymore. No, it is a full day excursion. So that was a mistake. I'm not going to go that short anymore. I also brought my wife for the first time to Las Vegas, not only for the first time for summer league for her, but our first time as a couple in Las Vegas. So it was a very different experience for me because usually for summer league, my diet consists of chicken tenders at the arena and like cheap free coffee. And that's essentially what I do. And then at night I get out from, I work a whole day. I get out, I find a craps table, and then that's basically my time. Nope, not with her. She was on TikTok. She's like, you're not taking me to the arena and I'm not eating chicken tenders. We're going to nice restaurants. We're doing Vegas things. I want to go to a pool. I've never been to a Vegas pool before.
Whoa.
Until this weekend. So she made me do other things, which was really fun because I found out that summer league, it's really the arena. If you're a basketball fan, I highly encourage everybody that is a real basketball fan, go to summer league at least once. Buy a ticket. It's like 40 or 50 bucks. General admission, it's awesome. You will not regret it if you like basketball. But what, like the real stuff in summer league is not at the arena. It's on the strip. It's around town. It's all this stuff. And, you know, she finds this great restaurant on TikTok. It, like, the bill ended up being like $270 for the two of us, which wasn't bad considering what we ate. We had like filet mignon, octopus, sushi, glasses of wine, like all this stuff. It was a great meal. Place was called Catch. I can't remember what hotel it was in, but it was in a hotel on the strip. And we sit down, and to my right walks in Pascal Siakam with his group, and he sits at the table like to the right of us. To my left, already sitting there, was Daryl Morey and his whole kind of clan. And then behind me was Byron Scott. I'm like, what are you doing here with his family? Or like looked like his wife and his family. All around him. And I'm like, oh, this is like where NBA people actually hang out. So that was the first night. The second day, she wants to go to the shops over at the Cosmopolitan area. There's like a Gucci store over there. So we're walking by the Gucci store. We see this giant sign in front of the Gucci store, closed for a private event. So I'm like, all right, which NBA player just shut down the Gucci store? None other than Golden State Warriors legend Chris Paul. It was in there with his whole family. I can only imagine what that must have been like for Chris Paul's family. Like, what is that? Just pick whatever you want, grab it off the shelf, walk out with it. I got it on me. That's got to be awesome. So you're just, it's just constantly walking around. We had Mexican food that afternoon. We saw Daniel Gafford walk in with his girlfriend, I think, who had just sort of like eating some enchiladas. It's just like everybody is there. And this, like the names I just mentioned, Pascal Siakam, Chris Paul, Daniel Gafford, like these guys aren't playing in summer league. But it doesn't matter because the whole NBA world just descends on Las Vegas. It's a great excuse to just do Vegas for a weekend.
Dude, I love these stories. I love this idea. I also love the idea. I will never be rich enough where someone comes to me and is like, where do you want to throw a party? And I'm thinking beyond restaurants. You know, I'm never like, you know where I would like to go? Gucci. Like, that's not even a thing that I would ever think of at all. Maxime, if it's you and I, so the what he just described is what I've always kind of fantasized. It's what I think. I've used this analogy before. I've used summer league for basketball fans the way Disneyland is for my daughter. Like we walk around Disneyland and we see like Mickey and Minnie and all these people. Same thing in Vegas during summer league. You see all these people. So it's you and I. We're in Catch. We see all those people. For sure me. I'm bringing it up to Erica even though she doesn't give a shit. Do you see Daryl Morey over there? Do you see this guy behind me? And you know, I ruin the entire time. I think you might do the same for Wes. Do you think he did that? Jules has never been to Vegas. Their first time together. You know, they're doing this thing. Wes is surrounded by the people he's covering. Can he talk about them? You know, or does he just have to pretend, lock eyes with Jules and be like, yep, I'm glad it's just you and I at the same moment.
Well, Wes is a little bit deeper. He's probably seen some of these people up close, maybe even had conversations with some of them. So there's maybe a little bit less of the star-studded feelings. It might be like a later thing as opposed to like trying to call it out right in that moment. But I could also see like Wes like holding hands with his wife walking down the strip, like pointing and being all excited, kind of like how when you take your kid to Disneyland type of a thing. So it definitely sounds a lot like adult Disneyland for the NBA fans.
And I have no idea what you mean, former Warrior Chris Paul. That never happened. I don't know what you're talking about. There is no history there in any way. Do you guys see the Bronny James? I guess I should say it the other way. The Jaylen Brown trying to have a private conversation on in the front row of that summer league game, saying Bronny is not a pro. What a have you ever had something like that happen? Are you like, I am the type of personality where I've had a million circumstances where I've said something, tried to be private, and then off it goes. You know, like 10 people I was not supposed to have hear it. Is that, are you guys ever in that prison?
Well, I feel like so many of my conversations happen and are literally recorded. And I've said a lot of things that I regret via podcast. I'm sure I'll say something in this podcast. Do you guys actually want to know how that worked with me and Jules at the dinner?
Yeah.
So this says more about my wife than it does me, but 100%, it does say a little bit more about me. It says something about me. 100%, I told her who everybody was as soon as I recognized them. I also explained to her that, yes, I have had conversations with Daryl Morey and Pascal Siakam. So I made it, like, I talked to them. The only one I've never talked to is Byron Scott because he hasn't been associated with the NBA and, like, whatever. So I told her, but she was all in. She was all in on it because she doesn't know who these people are, but wants to know that she's at the same place as important people. That's the most important thing to her. She's like, that's a celebrity. That's all I care. And so when we were walking down the strips, Maxime, you were like, yeah, I would be pointing out all these people. I don't point out anybody. I wait for her to ask the question because I know she will. So anytime that she saw a tall person, just in general, she was like, that's somebody, isn't it? And I would say 77% of the time she was right. There's also just a lot of tall people in the world. It didn't matter. But she would be like, that's somebody, isn't it? And I'd look and I'd be like, yeah, that's so-and-so. Or like, yeah, like we saw like Chimeze Metu like walked out of the, of like where we were waiting for our Uber outside the Aria. And she's like, that's somebody. I was like, yep. And then I just pulled it up on Google and I was like, this guy played for the Sacramento Kings last year. She goes, okay. And that's it. She's good. No follow-up. Not like, is he good? Is he bad? Is he going to be in the Hall of Fame? Who does he play for? Does not care. She's like, that's somebody. That's all I care about. We are all important people in the same important place.
Wow.
I love that. My very short version of that. This is recently. We're at a restaurant. Eric and I, Festus Azili was there. I'd point out for no reason at all, oh, there's Festus Azili. She doesn't say anything. She's like, what do you want to get for appetizer? I was like, yeah, yeah. He was on the podcast. She's like, dude, what do you want to get for an appetizer? I was like, I don't care. It's fine. You know?
What about the Azili? Didn't you hear me?
Yeah. It's like, no, can we just move on? Or do you want to get some bread? I mean, let's make some decisions. I should probably ask you some Warrior questions here. So let me throw you this softball. Wes, what do you think of the offseason so far? So what we're going to do today, I got some Lauri marketing questions for you. And one of the reasons you are so valuable, in addition to being entertaining, is you give us an objective standpoint, right? Whenever I have conversations about the Warriors offseason, it's in a vacuum. It's people, we all want it to be good. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? An endgame analysis. So, you know, be gentle. We're all kind of figuring this out together. But question number one there, you've seen the additions. What do you think, Matt? How would you grade the Warriors offseason so far?
You want like a letter grade? I mean, it's good. I like it. I'm into what it is that they're doing. The thing that stands out to me about the Warriors offseason is that it feels like it's a Mike Dunleavy Jr. offseason. Like, this was not a guy who, and he was obviously involved in the front office when Bob Myers was there, when I was covering the team, but he wasn't a guy that was just going to like pick up what Bob Myers dropped and just hold it for him. That was never going to be what he did. He was going to reshape the roster, push it in a new direction. And I think it started last summer with moving off the Jordan Poole contract and getting that expiring Chris Paul deal, knowing that, okay, 12 months from now, we'll be off that money, get out of jail free card on that. And then, yeah, the tough decision of letting Klay Thompson walk away. But what that has done is created a ton of cap flexibility for them going forward. I like the additions. I don't know that any one addition is a needle mover, right? I like D'Anthony Melton fine. Kyle Anderson, I like him fine. You know, all the other guys. But they just have options now in a way that it didn't feel like they had a ton of options last year. Like, thank goodness Pods ended up being good, right? Like, they relied a lot on a lot of rookies. Trayce Jackson-Davis, thank goodness he ended up being good. Like, what if they sucked? What if they were bad rookies? This team would have, you never know, right? The draft is an absolute crapshoot. So they went out, they have those guys obviously still, but they went out and added some proven veteran players. and they just have more depth, more options. And I'm going to be really intrigued to see what it is that Steve Kerr does with the lineups and the rotations. We know he likes to experiment, but that to me is the most exciting part coming out of the offseason is Steve Kerr has like all these new toys to play with, and it's going to be fun to see how he sets them up.
How are you doing, Maxine, with the offseason, right? We're a week removed. Swelling's gone down, at least emotionally, for Klay Thompson. The Lauri Markkanen thing is ongoing. We'll talk about that in a moment. But looking at the offseason so far, if it started tomorrow, if we were in October, we weren't in July, would you feel happy with how this offseason's played out?
Well, here's my concern. We have, back to Wes's point about Steve Kerr liking to play with his toys and tinker with the rotation, that's happening right now with Steve Kerr for Team USA. And we're seeing everybody, okay, admittedly, this was something that Team USA projected was going to happen. Every single one of these USA showcase games, Steve Kerr was going to try a different starting lineup. It makes a lot of sense. But Kerr also came into his coaching life being able to do that with unbelievably talented players, future Hall of Famers that D'Anthony Melton, Slo-Mo, Buddy Hield probably are not. So he's now probably going to be doing the same thing because that's a recipe that worked for him in the past. Why would he move away from that? Except it works for Team USA because those are all also Hall of Fame players, right? And so it's like, yeah, Joel Embiid has a bad game, but like he'll bounce back, and Steph didn't have a great second game. Look, he like went off in the third game. You know, he has a lot of grace to play around with these things, and I don't think that's going to be the case in this coming season. And if Kerr continues to kind of play like that, and there are rumblings that he might do something different, right, that he talked about bringing on Stotts in order to have a little bit more set play stuff happening, I could see these things shifting. But I could also see, just like Klay Thompson in the second half of last season, I can see people falling into the old patterns of what they thought worked, and that has me pretty nervous.
The Olympics have had a couple of just random thought-provoking scenarios for me. I'll just plug them in here. One, Steve Kerr continues to be underrated by Warriors fans. I mean, this team right now is like another redeemed team, right? Redeemed team two as opposed to dream team. They need to win this one. Like, we are all pretty locked in that they need to reclaim the Olympic gold. And, you know, they've done that on the roster across the board. We know who the players are. Steve Kerr's the fucking coach. When they had to pick a coach to lead us back to glory, that's who they picked. And then the other one's a little bit less optimistic. Seeing Steph Curry in his natural environment, seeing him just have to do things on the court as opposed to all the other things we asked him to do in Golden State, is that guy is so phenomenal at basketball. And watching him not have to worry about playing therapist and all the other things he does here and focus only on contributing there is fun to see, and is also a little frustrating that we put so much more on him here. Who's won the offseason, Wes? Looking at it as we sit here right now, what team holds the offseason championship belt?
The easy answer and the correct answer is the Philadelphia 76ers. I mean, out of 100 variations of this offseason, you simulate this offseason 100 times, this is the best outcome, right? But that's there. The team that other than Philadelphia, the team that won the offseason to me was Brooklyn, actually. I think what they did was a stroke of genius, not only to get more draft picks back, but then get their own draft picks, where this was a team that didn't own their own picks. All of them were in Houston and they had a bunch of picks in a bunch of places, but they ended up making the deal with Houston that ended up getting their own picks back. And key among them, the 2025 pick in this upcoming draft, the Cooper Flagg draft, but not just the Cooper Flagg draft. There's like three or four guys in this draft that most front offices view as potential number one type picks. And so they have put themselves in position to now tank themselves. They control their own destiny. They could be as bad as they want. And by the way, they're going to be really bad. And that's an accomplishment, right? This is one of those years where you're going to have to try to be bad. Being as bad as the Brooklyn Nets are going to be is going to be an accomplishment. With sort of the forward-looking part of what they did coming out of the whole Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving experience, usually you mortgage your future for 5 or 6 years after that. Within basically a year and a half, they have regained control of their future. And if they're bad the way that they want to be, and if they get some lottery luck going into the draft next year, then this is a team that's going to get maybe somebody like Cooper Flagg, who can be the anchor of their entire franchise for the next decade plus. And that's just a really hard sort of mid shift in the middle of the ocean turn to kind of just do the way they did it and as quickly as they did it. I thought it was incredibly creative. Also, yeah, this team won the offseason. They got all their picks back. They got the 5 first round picks coming over from the New York Knicks. So they got their own picks back. And now they're one of those teams that are flush with draft capital. Like, this is a team ready to move forward.
Unexpected answer, and yeah. I respect it. Also, they have an identifiable direction. I mean, just like you're saying, exactly. Before, who knew where the hell they were going? Now we do. Random question about the Knicks, and then I got some Laurie marketing and stuff for it. And so it's just a personality thing. With Julius Randle, yeah, he was their face of the franchise, 25-12 guy, surefire all-star, does phenomenally, gets hurt, not his fault. And while he's hurt, the Knicks develop a new identity, right? Now they're led by Jalen Brunson, and maybe a little bit worse than that, Wes. They're led by this Villanova identity. For this is me if I was Julius Randle. They've got these guys who are united from a championship run in college, and they use that to have this, you know, really impressive postseason run. And now the city is crazy excited. And right, if I'm Julius Randle, right, if I couldn't be more worried about the team forgetting about me, they sign another fucking Villanova guy. You know, in comes Mikal Bridges. He's even better. Everyone's super excited. If you were Julius Randle in that scenario, would you be bitter that they're developing this whole thing without you and they probably have like all these inside Villanova jokes in that locker room? Or are you just happy? You know, like, nah, you've got talent around you now and New York's a basketball city. Like, how would you experience that?
Well, you're getting paid a lot of money, which helps. But I do think that there are Knicks fans that still like Julius Randle, right? I don't know. The discourse around the Knicks, at least around sort of the Knicks fans who I know, is we did all that despite Julius Randle being hurt. You know, they don't look at it like the way that I think Heat fans look at the Tyler Hero run. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, they made the 2023 finals after Tyler Hero got hurt in their first playoff game. Tyler Hero is the problem. No, I think Knicks fans look at it as we did all that and we still have Julius Randle coming back. So, but if I'm Julius Randle, the thing I'm looking at is, you can go on the Villanova website and you can get an MSBA degree in 18 months. Do you just do that?
That's such an incredible piece of advice. On the off chance that Julius Randle is listening to this, you need to do that in a fucking heartbeat. Or at least start it. Don't even get the degree, right? Just like start the program and announce that during some press conference. Like, oh, this is, by the way, I'm enrolled, you know, no big deal.
Take a campus tour, go to the campus bookstore, buy a Villanova hoodie, start wearing it around. Just be like, I'm so excited. I'm getting my MSBA. I don't even know what that is.
The Villanova hoodie is the key too, because you wear it in a press conference. And they're like, oh, is that just, you know, some kind of team camaraderie? Oh, no. I didn't mention that. I'm going here now.
You didn't know?
I appreciate you asking.
I'm working on my degree, yes.
Some Laurie marketing stuff. All right. So for me, the offseason has been a little incomplete. It feels like all these moves I really like, but I really like them in the context you're filling out a roster. We bring in another big name like Laurie marketing, Slow-Mo and Healed and DeAnthony Melton. All these pieces make a lot more sense to me. And it certainly seems that's what they're doing. They've been pursuing Laurie marketing. And recently those negotiations have gone more public. It looks like the Jazz are leaking things to Shams to kind of get the asking price up. In fact, we've got that clip. Go ahead and play that here.
What I have picked up is the Warriors and Jazz, they have continued conversations. It's just the Jazz are in a position right now. They wouldn't be even thinking about moving Lauri Markkanen if this was a team that is trying, like Ryan knows, if you're trying to compete and win, that's a guy you compete and win with. This is a team that obviously is going down more of a rebuilding path and is... If you're going to rebuild and you're trying to compete for not a playoff berth, but probably the number one overall pick, you have to consider. I don't think they want to move Lauri Markkanen, but if the Golden State Warriors put in a Brandon Podziemski and, you know, from what I'm told, 3 first-round picks, 3-4 unprotected pick swaps, you know, 3-4 second-round picks.
Is that a name?
Kuminga's a name, but I think the Jazz, from everything I've been told, the Jazz are more focused on Brandon Podziemski and his inclusion in the deal. All the picks being in the deal. And I think from the Warriors' perspective, it's Podziemski, but then there's not the all the picks. And if it's all the picks, then there's not going to be a Podziemski. And so this could be a back and forth, but both sides are kind of entrenched right now at where they're at, saying nothing is going to change. So only time will tell, but I think the Jazz are very comfortable with extending Lauri Markkanen. And at that point, you'll see more suitors potentially as well in him, not just teams that feel like, okay, we'll be able to re-sign him.
All right, so what did we really just hear now? We heard essentially that look, the Jazz don't really want to make any deals. And really, the Jazz are very happy with Lauri Markkanen, and really, they're going to extend them. But Wes, if the Warriors give up 7 picks, 3 to 4 first rounders, 3 to 4 pick swaps, and a series of players, then maybe the Jazz would be willing to consider some of these offers. So that at least seems like it may have come from Ainge. How good, man, is Lauri Markkanen? Because when I've watched him, but I don't cover the league, and I'm in this weird place because I'm viewing him more as, can he help Steph? You know, can he prop open the window? So it's not just a straightforward question. Straightforward. How good is Lauri Markkanen? How do you view this guy?
2 things before I answer that question. I love that Shams, and I don't mean anything, I'm not taking any shots at Shams, but I think he'd be the first to tell you, like, he's not, like, awesome on camera and during interviews. I like how he said to Ryan McDonough, who used to run the Phoenix Suns, you know this, right?
You know this.
And the thing that he says that Ryan McDonough, who worked in the NBA, knows is, when you want to be good, you usually need the good players to do the part of the being good. And I'm like, I think everybody knows that, Shams. Like, I know you're an insider and stuff, but like, good players. So I love that. I love that he like tries to loop the guy in that he's on the show with, but in a very silly way. And I already forgot the second thing. So in terms of your question, Lauri Markkanen's very good. I think if you asked like the guy who's entrenched on NBA Twitter and League Pass, they would say, do it. Oh, wait, I remember my second thing, but it's related to the thing I'm about to say. So I think they might overrate Lauri Markkanen. I think Lauri Markkanen is almost to the point where he's underrated by casual fans who never see the Utah Jazz and overrated by like League Pass diehards, people who are generally like me who are just watching NBA basketball every single night. He's very good. He's all-star caliber. He's insanely productive, right? He's 7 feet tall. He's a knockdown shooter and not just one of these guys who makes him from the corners, makes shots on the move, above the break. You can run him off of a dribble handoff. You can run him as the screener on the dribble handoff, and he can pop. As a playmaker, he's getting better, but I wouldn't put him at a level that he's running your offense through. He's more of a guy you run your offense to. But if you're the Warriors, you've got 2 guys who you can run your offense through, and Draymond and Steph, so you're not worried about that. And he's a perfect fit for what it is that they're trying to do. Is he the guy who can be the number 2 player on a championship team? I don't know that I would go that far. To me, he might be, but he could be the best number 3 in the league, and maybe something short of a number 2. It really kind of would depend on who your 1 is. But I think he's awesome, and I think he'd be a great fit in Golden State, maybe more than any other team in the league. Is I think the Warriors are my favorite spot for him.
I heard somebody make a reference that he's a little bit like a 7-foot Klay Thompson because he can score without dribbling. You know, yep. And he can hit 3-pointers, which speaks to me, and it gives us a little bit of rim protection. Weaponize that, man. 3 to 4 first rounders and 3 to 4 pick swaps. Would you do that?
So that like, was the that, second is, thing I wanted to get to. The pick swaps are nothing if I'm the Warriors. Like, you're getting Lauri Markkanen. I have Draymond. I have Steph. We have all these role players. The Jazz are going to, like, when they trade Lowry, that's the signal that they're tanking. They're going to be worse than the Warriors.
Good call. Yeah.
For the duration of these pick swaps, right? They're only going to be the next 6 or 7 years. So give them the pick swaps. Who cares? That doesn't count. But Danny Ainge gets to write in the press release, I swindled Joe Lake up in the Spurs and in the Warriors, and I got 7 first round picks. Well, maybe you only got 3. And then some nonsense pick swaps.
I'm surprised you didn't say, look, the pick swaps would be like, you know, pick 19 for pick 17. And, you know, Maxine really knows this, but the difference between those two isn't really a big thing. You know, just like whatever is what it is.
Save big money at Menards. Never get locked out from lost keys again. Menards carries a huge selection of electronic lock sets. Get a TrueBolt touchscreen deadbolt that features 1-touch locking and 50 programmable user codes. Available in matte black or satin nickel finishes on sale now through September 8th at Menards. America's number 1 home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals. Save big money at Menards.
Here's another thing that I'm constantly hearing. Not constantly, I'm starting to hear a lot. That Danny Ainge likes to negotiate, doesn't like making trades. Yeah. You know, we've seen that 1,000 times. So it's toeing the water, but not really. Just from afar, because I know it's not the Jazz whom you cover. Do you get the feeling? Do you think these are genuine negotiations by Ainge, or is this just somebody, you know, just to see what they have and there's no real rush?
So Danny Ainge earned that reputation when he was in charge of the Celtics. And the difference between what Utah's going through now and what Boston was going through then was that the Celtics had their guys, right? They had Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. They had some good players, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving back in the day, Al Horford and his first stint with Boston. Like, they were basically a good team that was looking for that extra piece to take them over the top. But to get that extra piece, it was going to cost them Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, first, like a right. bunch of these first round picks. They had the Sacramento pick that was coming over a long time ago, all these things. And that to me is a harder place to actually pull the trigger is, okay, opportunity cost. Are we going all in on this guy? And time again, he negotiated, he kind of got down a road and then aborted. And that's fine. It's very different than what he's done in Utah. Every Ooh. Time in Utah, he has publicly said, I'm not trading this guy, and then traded yeah. that guy. He did it with Donovan Mitchell. He did it with Rudy Gobert. And he's going to do it with Lauri Markkanen. And whether or not he signs this extension or not, I don't know. But Lauri Markkanen's going to get traded. And if I'm the Warriors, I'm calling the bluff too. I'm saying, okay, you want all this stuff? Cool. You either sign Lauri to this extension or he's a free agent next year. And I've heard a lot that, by the way, that if Lauri Markkanen signs the extension, that he'll be more teams will be in on trading for Lauri Markkanen. I don't buy that. That seems to me like one of those things that NBA reporters say because they hear it from other NBA reporters. If you sign him to an extension, he's making like $18 million, $19 million this year. You sign him to an extension, he's 30 plus million going forward next year. I think that would poison pill his contract, which it wouldn't be dramatically different in terms, it wouldn't be impossible to trade for it, but it would be a complication and it would just be another complication. And I don't know. I think if you're a team that, I guess if you're a team that you don't think Lauri Markkanen would extend with you, then you're more in the ball club. But if you're a team that wants Lauri Markkanen, I'm going to assume that you're not a rebuilding group. You're a team that wants Markkanen like the Warriors as maybe that extra piece, that final piece even. That's a team that's higher to contending status. And I'm going to imagine if you traded for Lauri, he would probably be like, cool, extending with a team that can contend. Yeah. The other thing about contending teams, they tend to be more expensive teams, and having Lauri at $18 million and getting a chance to negotiate that contract extension yourself is way more attractive than having the Jazz negotiate that extension for him and then acquiring that with the poison pill and all that kind of stuff that's involved. So did not mean to go into a numbers deep dive there because it's boring, but...
It's not boring. It's important. And as someone who spends a little bit of time on the NBA trade machine, which makes me an expert, Wes, no big deal. The smaller the number is on a contract, the easier it is to trade. I mean, that's the simplest way to phrase it.
So Ryan McDonough knows that.
That's as Ryan knows. That's exactly right. So, I mean, you know, if it's an $18 million contract versus 40, it's easier. But then the other way, if I'm Lauri Markkanen, whatever team I'm going to, the more assets they have to give up for me to go there, the shittier the team is.
Right.
If I'm leaving, because I like my opportunity in this next place. So Lauri is not saying anything out there, but he's one of the components to this. He has a little bit of leverage.
Yep.
You know, if he really wants to make this happen, he can press that button. He can tell Utah, I'm not re-signing with you. Make this happen now. And so, I didn't mean to dive deeper into the numbers, but I agreed with what you're saying. Let's hear the other side to this negotiation coin, right? So Shams comes out. Right? We hear it's going to require 1,000 picks, and who they really want, Wes? They want Pajemski. Well, following that, strangely enough, Joe Lacob was at Summer League, and guess which player he talked about?
Brandon Pajemski, I know he's not playing tonight, but he's played so well through Summer League. He's had 1 year of experience now. I just talked to him a little bit ago. He said he was actually really nervous for Summer League last year. Really? And now having that year of experience, he feels confident this year and his game has been growing. What did you see from him in his rookie season?
Oh, my God. He was a revelation, to be quite honest. I mean, he's one of the all rookie team top five in the league. He started a whole bunch of games for us. Steve had troubles getting him off the floor. I mean, he had to have him on the floor. He's so good. He does so many things well. He's ultra confident. He's got an NBA body. He can get wherever he wants. He obviously can shoot threes. He can drive. He can pass. I mean, what can he do? We're really excited. We think we've got a future all-star. We really do.
I like when people say obvious things and then explain it to you. Steve Kerr couldn't get him off the floor. Very short pause. Because he's so good. He's so good. They couldn't even get him off the floor. So I don't know. No big deal. He's going to be an all-star. Wes. So similar thing that we just went through with Laurie. Okay. You look at Brandon Trajewski. How good? You know what I mean? He had a good rookie year. There's no question at all. Failure. 26.6 minutes per game, 9.2 points per game, 45% from the field, 38% from three. And then, you know, a lot of glue stats, almost 6 boards per game, 3.5 assists, and all of the charges. He took all the charges in the league. Okay. How do you view this guy? What kind of asset is he?
I think he's really good. I struggle in terms of where he is as an asset, because you're telling me I can include him in a deal and get Larry Markkanen, who is an all-star, is young, is a perfect fit for my team. And I really like Pods. I love watching him play. He's gritty. He's got great feel for the game. Joe Lacob nailed it. He does all of it. He can dribble. He could drive. He could shoot. He defends well. My biggest problem with Pods is what's the archetype for him? What's the pro comp? Like, if he's an all-star, what all-star looks and plays like him? He's a 6'5" guard who's not an insane athlete, is a good shooter, but not an elite one. And I don't think he ever will be an elite one.
How about Manu Ginobili?
That's a good comp. I think that would probably be the closest thing for him. But it's, and then what? It's Manu, and then who else? It's, we're talking about one of one here. And that's when it's kind of reminds me of the Draymond Green comps. It's like, okay, so every sort of overweight 6'7" undersized power forward in college is going to be the next Draymond? No, he's kind of one of one. I don't know. I think Pods could be really good. I would trade Kuminga before I traded Pods, and I wouldn't think that hard about it. But all-star, that seems to me like keeping expectations that don't need to be there.
Maxime, I'm only going to admit this to you. Mute so that Wes can't hear me at all. I've had a few people tell me this. So like leading into this, if you'd asked me this like 2 weeks ago, who would you prefer to give up, Kuminga or Pods? It would have been, you know, Pods in a heartbeat. They wouldn't even let you finish the sentence. I've now had enough people tell me what Wes just told me where I'm starting to say that just so it sounds like I'm in the know. You know, like, oh, no, do you know how good Pajemski is? I don't know. So for you, what's that question for you? If you had to give up either Pajemski or JK, which one?
Well, isn't this like just what Wes was saying earlier, was just like media members convincing other media members to say things? I feel like we're all just collectively propping ourselves up. I mean, same, right? And there's Wes, I think you're, I don't know, what do you call the successor, right, at the Bay Area Media News Group? Danny Emmerman is reporting that, like, for what it's worth, every rival exec staffer I talked with in Vegas absolutely loves Pajemski, like super high on him. This flavor of quote isn't a team talking up their own guy situation. So it's maybe not, or maybe that is just media members frothing up media members, and I just proved my own point. I don't actually know.
Yes.
But if there's proof to that pudding, and right, and what Danny is hearing is, oh yeah, there's like a lot of people are really excited about him. That's a very different conversation from what you have with Kuminga, where people say, oh yeah, like very raw, right? Potentially high ceiling, but I don't know, like, you hear a lot more of like skepticism around him. You don't have this sort of coalescing of everybody saying, wow, we love this guy. And like, who knows? Maybe that's just because Pods is like really gregarious, right? And like does a lot of the little things and is really smart and gritty and like frankly white, you know? Like,
yeah.
There's just so much crap that could be rolled up in this. To me, Kuminga was just so electric on the floor, but I could understand how the types of personalities to play in multiple ways. Like, Kuminga is just going to drive to the basket, be an incredible athlete. You need that. Pods could actually unlock more on both ends of the floor theoretically at his position than Kuminga. So I could see it both ways, but like I said, I think I'm just now in the media washing machine, and I don't really know
what's going
on.
Well, part of this is the praise, or part of the praise is the timing of all of this. Pods is coming off of a rookie year. There's no discussion about his next contract because there doesn't have to be. Jonathan Kuminga is going into the last year where he needs to sign this rookie extension, and he has not developed the way that you would think a player 3 years into the NBA, going to his fourth year in the NBA, would be developing. He's not at the point where you think he should be. The other part of this too is, I think Pajemski got drafted to the best situation for him. It's not a whole lot of teams that would be better for Pods. Jonathan Kuminga got drafted to the worst possible situation for him. He did. And this is why I argue
you're right.
That they shouldn't have drafted him. I would have taken Franz Wagner over him, or not Franz Wagner. What was the guy? Well, no, Wagner in that draft. I would have taken Wagner over him because this is a guy who just needs room in the yard to explore his game.
It's what Jalen Green got in Houston. As much lease as you possibly want. Yeah.
It's what Giannis got early days in Milwaukee. It's just you need like a guy who has so much untapped potential and is that raw. If you're drafted to a team like the Warriors where you're going to have to play a role, it's really hard to play a role when you're so raw. We don't even know what it is that you do well. So we don't know what your role should be other than jump high, run fast, which he's done. And he's done a really good job of it. And he's had moments where he's looked like a future all-star. But the other part of this too, and this is sort of my argument all the time, like in a vacuum, give me Kuminga over Podziemski. And that's not even close to me. But for the Warriors, the goal shouldn't be necessarily like, are we giving up or keeping the worst or the better player? It's how do we build a team that can compete with Steph Curry on it? And a team with that, if you're trading away pods in the first round picks and you're keeping Kuminga and you're bringing in Lauri Markkanen, now there's even less opportunity for Kuminga, right? Like you could argue that Markkanen with the floor spacing and all this stuff is better for Kuminga. I want the ball in Kuminga's or in Markkanen's hands though. I don't want the ball in Kuminga's hands. I want the ball in Kuminga's hands even less than it was last year because you also have Steph and Draymond there who are going to have the ball. So I would trade away Kuminga, not deal with the next contract with him, keep pods on this rookie scale contract that you have on him now. He's cheap. He's good. He's a perfect fit on this team. He's a perfect fit on this team with Lowry on it. It's just a no-brainer. It just makes basketball sense. And the job here is just to let Steph Curry. I honestly don't even think for the Warriors, and you guys might not even want to hear this, but it's not about winning another championship. It's just about letting Steph win a couple of playoff rounds. As long as he has that opportunity, that's the best possible ending for him. He wants to compete at a high level, and I think he'd be good with it too.
It's a conversation we're going to have during a different podcast. I know where you're coming from. Just to put a bow on this, to be crystal clear, I believe in Jonathan Kuminga's future. Absolutely do. In fact, I believe in it more than Podziemski. But do I think their floors where they are right now? What could I count on them? What Wes just said speaks to me. Podziemski's floor is a little higher. And as far as who I want on the team just next year, that's all I'm talking about, just next year. If the Warriors don't bring in another guy, you know, if like the Brandon Ingrams and the Lauri Markkanens and like all of that stuff doesn't play out, then I want Kuminga because he's a lottery ticket. You know, maybe he scratched, maybe all of that experience he needed that he didn't get through years one and two, he's finally ticked over. Year four, we see it, you know. But if we don't, just like you said, if we bring in a big name, then maybe Podziemski could be a little bit more valuable. But here's the problem, Wes. We just heard, okay? I want to keep Podziemski on this team if we bring in Markkanen. But according to Shams, they're telling you, fuck you. There's no way that will happen. We have to include that in a trade. So here, this is from Noah, part of our Patreon family, throughout this suggested trade. You tell me if you would do it. The Warriors give up Gary Payton II, Kevon Looney, Moses Moody, Brandon Podziemski, 1, 2, 3 first rounders in 25, 26, 28. I think you might have to move the year. I'm not sure if you can get away with a 25 first rounder because I think they'd want it further out, you know, when we're really bad. But anyways, 3 first rounders and 2 second rounders. And they get back Lauri Markkanen and Walker Kessler. Look at it from both sides. So I'll give it to you again, the quick version. GP, Loon, Moody, Podziemski, and then a ton of picks. 3 firsts, 2 seconds.
The Jazz won't do that. And you know what? If I'm the Warriors, I mean, if I'm getting Walker Kessler out of it, I would do it. But the Jazz wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do it if I'm the Warriors if it was just for Markkanen either. I really would. First of all, I don't know why the Jazz are preferring Podziemski over Kuminga. To me, they're the team that should take Kuminga. I know they maybe don't want to deal with the extension part of it, but that's the team that could just give him the ball and just let him do stuff, right? And make the Warriors look stupid for trading him. Like, that's the team that could do that. So, I don't know. I would, if I'm the Warriors, I'm calling the bluff. I'm saying, whatever swaps you want, have them. We don't care. The first round picks, we'll negotiate on those protections, et cetera, whatever it is that we got to do on that. Here's Kuminga. Here's the salary. Take it or leave it. And if you don't take it, then you got to find a better deal from somewhere else. I don't think it's out there personally.
I think you're right, man. I think I'm overusing this, so I'll try to stay away from it. But I feel like the Warriors had 3 possibilities entering this offseason. It was past, present, future. You know, they could have done the past thing, keep Clay, do some celebratory laps, you know, just kind of have a bunch of hooray, big three nights as we go forward. We don't win any other championships, but we bask in the past. Not going to happen, right? We just try to collect. They could have done the future thing, which no one's talking about, and I don't think they should, but they blow it up. They trade everybody. They trade Draymond. They trade Steph. They start all the way over. That's not what's happening. So they pick the present, right? Like, let's do it now. This Steph's here. Let's go for this. So if that's what they did, you're picking the present. As much as I like a Buddy Hield signing, that's not really moving the needle. You know, so at this stage, if we're in this lane, then, you know, finish it off. Bring in Market. You got to bring in another person. And what it requires is Pajemski, fine. You know, we're here now. You know, we've already decided to go this direction. So I think we've got to finish it off. Would you do it, Maxine? Let's say, I mean, I think Wes is right. I do not think the Jazz do this. But if they did, you're Mike D. Would you say yes?
I'm still sort of shell-shocked by Wes saying, like, even in this best-case scenario, we're not winning another ring. That does change the picture for me, right? Because I think I am really excited about what some of these young guys can do. You know, and it's like to have a 19th pick hit at like this is very, very difficult. You know, and it could be another decade of just absolute mediocrity before we get back to anything resembling a franchise that's actually exciting. So it's hard to let that go for like a couple of playoff rounds, you know, like the East, all sorts of random teams win a couple of playoffs rounds every year. So to me, it's really diluted the impact of that. So it all ultimately comes back to Steph. What would really make him happy? Because that is still the only thing I actually really care about, is Steph retiring as a Warrior and him being as happy as possible. Because now my happiness in this fandom is tied to Steph's happiness, right? If he's like sitting on the bench unhappy or like refusing to go back to Minnesota like Kevin Garnett, like that would kill me in a way that would last way longer than any other feelings that I would have. So frankly, if I'm Mike D, I'm calling up Steph and I'm saying, Steph, like, tell me what you need, man. I'll do any of it.
If I can make one argument for Markkanen too, like in terms of the future concept that Bram was talking about, Markkanen's 27 years old. You mm-hmm. trade for him, you sign him. I mean, we're not talking about a total win now move for some sort of 31-year-old guy. He's 27. And as he ages, he's going to still be 7 feet tall and he's still going to be an elite shooter. And if you're looking to, okay, what do we do after Steph, after Draymond? Every player pairs well with Lauri Markkanen, right? It's not a weird fit situation where it kind of would open up avenues for you if you're trying to acquire another guy and you still have Lauri Markkanen on the roster.
I like it. All right. It's almost time for podcast advice. Before we do, this has been bursting through me. I read this story on a random social media tweet like a month back, dude. I almost called you then, but I figured it'd be better on air. So story about Kawhi. What I'm going to ask you at the end of this one is whether or not you think it is true. Quote, while with the Spurs, Kawhi was known for his love of red apples. One time after practice, everyone decided to go out for a team dinner. When it was his turn to order, Kawhi waved off the waiter and instead pulled out a bag of 12 apples. Coach Popovich asked what he was doing, and Kawhi simply replied, apple time, apple time, and then ate all 12 apples with a knife and fork. Wes, is there any chance that's true, dude? Like, I haven't met this guy. But like, this has haunted me since I've read it now for 4 weeks. I just love the idea. I've even pictured him doing something with his hands when he says apple time. I feel like he goes like this or something, like jazz hands before he jumps in. I don't know why that's part of my story, but I do think that went down. So like, is this a real thing, dude? Like, have you ever heard anything like this?
So this is from, I've seen this, like this is from like years ago. This has been debunked, I'm pretty sure, as untrue. This has been out there and debunked. It made the rounds. There is 0% chance that this is true. There's no way. There's absolutely no way. But whoever made it up is a genius because they picked the perfect character. Only Kawhi. I don't know what other person you'd be like. If you heard this about Steph, you'd be like, that's stupid. That's a dumb story. That's not true. I know that's not true. Obviously, he eats at International Smoke, and that's his only thing that he eats. But I just think it's funny that you just now stumbled on this. This has been out there for a while.
Not only did I just stumble on it, here's how much I've been obsessing about it. I was out to dinner recently at a bad theme. And when my food came, I turned to Eric and said, apple time. She had no idea what the fuck I was talking about. I have not shared this story with her, meant nothing. It really entertained me. Like, I genuinely enjoyed it. Oh, it's too bad. I wish I hadn't.
Just sounds like Erica ignores everything you say.
Everything. Oh my God. We've been together for so long. Like, yeah, she's not listening. She does not need to.
You're like Apple Time. She's like, was Apple Time also on your podcast? I don't care.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly right. Tell it to Festus Azili, dude. I don't care in any way, shape, or form. I wish I could go back to a time when this story seemed true to me. I wish I just needed 30 seconds back in my life when I hadn't brought it to you. Well, I was going to ask if it was true. Have you ever had any, it's not true.
I have the food story.
Go ahead.
All right. Prep me before this. This is good. It goes back to Vegas. Yeah. We can kind of go back to
random food interaction for you.
So I'm going to take you back to Catch in Las Vegas. Between our table, where my wife and I were sitting, and Daryl Morey's table was another couple. And this Catch, obviously, seafood place. The couple orders this beautiful grilled branzino. You know, like the big fish, like the whole fish. Awesome. They order that, side of Brussels sprouts. Guy orders a glass of red wine. Classy, classy meal. It's happening for them. The waiter goes to the woman, what would you like to drink? She orders, and I'm not kidding, and I will never forget this, a vodka Red Bull. To pair with her Branzino. And I did a double take. It's one of those things where it was one of those restaurants where the table is like 6 inches away from you. Like you're basically sitting with each other. And I did a double take and I don't think they noticed, because people who order vodka Red Bulls at a nice restaurant don't notice things. But I was flabbergasted. I'd never seen that before. I wish the waiter had the autonomy to just say no.
Yeah. You're in the wrong place. Yeah, would you like a hot dog as a side? Or how can we make this good for you? Oh, I love it. I wish you had ordered apples. The only weird food story I have for you, I used to buy weed from this girl in Santa Cruz who ate butter like a lollipop. So like she'd open the door, holding a stick of butter and then sucking on the end of it. And so the portion she'd suck on it was whittled down. And because of the really weird power dynamic, when you were buying weed from somebody, I had to pretend like it didn't bother me. Like, hooray, just try to get into it. That has stuck with me for years. I feel
like that pairs well with a vodka Red Bull.
That's how, you know, it may have been the same woman. How old was she? I mean, we don't have to look at that.
She looked like she had gone through a few sticks of butter in her day.
We've made it. We've made it, Wes. We're here. Advice, okay, for people who are starting a podcast, what piece of advice would you give to them?
Do it. Just do it. Make it. Just whatever it is that you want to make, and make it. If you're making a podcast, I have two big pieces of advice. The first one is make the podcast that you want to hear. And don't make the podcast because you think you're right or you have something to say. Just make you should be making a podcast because the podcast you want doesn't exist, and you should just, and then you make it. You scratch that itch for yourself. That's the first piece of advice. The second piece of advice that I have for people is don't worry about having a good show. Worry about making a good show. And it's not going to be great every single time. It's like the process of it is going to be difficult. You're going to have shows that just suck. Your first few shows are going to be bad, no matter how awesome and how right and how many great ideas and how many awesome opinions and the great takes you have. Your first few shows are going to be terrible. They're going to suck. They're supposed to. That's not the point. Don't worry about having the good show. Worry about making it. What can you do going forward every single day that helps you make the good show? What's the process? What's all that stuff consist of? What's your game plan? What kind of vocal exercises are you doing? All these things. Like, think about the show. Think about making a good show. Don't worry about having a good show.
That's great advice. Shit, heartfelt enough. Well, add a little bit. If you're thinking about doing, let's say, a Warriors podcast, here's my advice. Don't. There's too many fucking Warriors podcasts. Stay the hell out of the field, dude. We've got like a million of them. Keep them to yourself. Just talk to your friends. Get Festus. You're fine. The piece I would add, what I said to that other person, was do a podcast. Be able to explain why someone will listen to you. You know, if you're going to do it on NBA, why are they listening to your NBA opinion? Once you figure that specific out, then you will have gold on your hands. Maxine, let's make yours a teaser. All right. You think on this in the beginning of next episode, we will drop that. Wes, look forward to this. I was hell of excited. I kept you like fucking 40 minutes longer than promised. If people need way more Goldberg in their life, where do they go?
Check out the Locked On NBA podcast. Obviously doing the Locked On Heat podcast, but we talk about the Warriors on Locked On NBA. Also, the Just Basketball podcast is usually three times a week. Now it's two times a week because it's the off season. Talking about the NBA there as well. And then just I might have some irons in the fire. We might have some stuff happening on the writing front. So not anytime soon, but for next season. So just follow me on Twitter, whatever it's called now, WC Goldberg.
Dope city. Appreciate it. If you're looking for me, I'll be stuck in elevators with filthy little bastard kids pressing every button to not letting me out. We're also on social media, everywhere, Patreon. If you want to support us, thank you to Noah and everybody on that side. If you want to get us a question, a compliment, a comment, a criticism, anything, you can shoot them all in an email to
huddle@warriorshuddle.com.
That I'm on. Go Warriors. Hopefully. We'll see you real soon. Let's go.
Good, good.
Save big money on everything now at Menards. Create fresher, cleaner air with DampRid products. Control the humidity in your space with a hanging bag moisture absorber. They're great for closets and laundry rooms. Grab a 3-pack on sale through September 8th. Save big on DampRid moisture absorbers at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big money at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. We have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Get free estimates fast using our easy do-it-yourself landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape products at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and Menards.com for deals.
Save.